Recorded live.
Welcome everybody to the episode 29 of the Geocaching Podcast. It's been a week since I've done, or 2 weeks since I've done this, because I took the week off. Me and my wife had a baby, and so we actually took the week off, and we just spent time as a family. We had a son. His name is Elliot Andrew. He's our second son. So well, we're back this week, and we have reviewer Tiki on the show. So, but first I want to remind anyone who is calling or listening to the show live, they can call in 724-444-7444, TalkCast ID is 7525, and there's no need this time to actually have a PIN number. You can just go ahead and put right away. You don't need to sign up at all for PIN. You can just dial in and get on our show, and we'll get you on the show, and you can ask Tiki any questions you want. But first, Daryl, how's it been? It's been a week since we've talked to each other. How have you been?
Yeah, well, we actually hit our 100th find not this past weekend, but the weekend before, or our 1,000th find. So, yeah, we've been caching like crazy and enjoying it.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, congrats. Oh,
thank you. Well, the mosquitoes were a little bit nasty this last weekend, so we didn't get as much caching done as we probably would have liked. So we're only at, I think it's like 10:50 right now.
Yeah, mosquitoes have been bad, man. I can't even walk out of my house without having being eaten by mosquitoes. I had some people who had found a cache that I just placed, and they said, man, that was really covered with mosquitoes. And it's funny because when I went and placed it, there was no mosquitoes there because of it hadn't done all the, or it had just rained, and the mosquitoes hadn't had time to hatch yet. And now, I mean, you can't even, I look up on my walls and there's tens of mosquitoes on my wall. So that's been hindering me from caching. But we did, we got, my son was 6 days old and we got him a geocaching account. And we went out and we found one just so he could have one, one cache. So he's got one cache under his belt and he was only 6 days old when he got the account.
Well, as long as he knows the swag is not for eating yet.
I think I have more issues with my 20-month-old doing that. He seems to want to put everything in his mouth. Seems like no matter what he can get his hands on, he puts it in his mouth. So, got to keep watching him on that one. Otherwise, he does tend to eat the swag and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea to avoid Nanos for a while.
Yeah, probably. Otherwise, I might have to report on the cache page that my son swallowed it, and that's probably not good.
No.
So, yeah, I've got a couple coins laying around the house, and he was trying to. I was showing him because he really liked to look at them, and I was showing him the other day, and he kept putting them in his mouth, and I said, "Micah, you can't eat those coins." So
they are not cookies.
Yeah, no, they're not. They would probably hurt when you try to bite them too.
Yeah. But, I would imagine, but I don't want to try it.
Me either. It's just one of those things that I don't want to try biting the coin. So, well, congratulations on your 1,000th cash. So was it a good one? Was it worth the milestone?
Well, we did our 1,000th cash as your favorite, what we refer to as a liar cash. It was that 5-5 Mount Wixom cache that you enjoyed so much.
Oh, yes. I didn't like that because now I have a 5-5 on my stats that is not really a 5-5. It was more like a 1-1, but it was interesting.
Yeah, we'd enjoyed it just because of the creativity. And, you know, we went and snapped a couple of pictures, and it's like, this is the last photo that our guide took before he fell down the mountain. So, you know, it was the creativity that we enjoyed of that cache.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. We enjoyed it, but like I said, it was one of those that I said, now I have 5-5, it's not really a 5-5. But oh well, what can you do?
I was just going to say, why don't we move on to our reviewer Tiki, who's on the phone with us, and get some feedback from him.
Yeah, good evening.
All right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First thing that I wanted to add, well, I see that you were actually up in Michigan, and I think you've met Daryl, right?
I think we met at the GeoBash, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, we did.
Yes. Very nice.
So my first question for you is how did you get your name?
Tiki is actually kind of a shortened version of our actual caching name. Our caching name is Tiki Birds. And we got that from our pet. We have a pet lovebird whose name is Tiki. And that name actually came from one of our favorite rides at Disney World, which is the Enchanted Tiki Room. So, long answer.
Yeah. Well, hey, those are the fun ones that, you know, when you actually have a name that has some meaning to you. So, how long have you been a reviewer?
I think I started about May timeframe, so not too long compared to some of the other people, but there have been a few new reviewers I've seen since then, too.
So, if I might, yeah. How does one become a reviewer?
It's basically by invitation only. Groundspeak kind of has to approve you, and then the other Michigan reviewer, Rusty, approached me about it, and he said, well, you want to be a reviewer? I said, okay, that sounds interesting. So it took a couple months after that, and then I got my powers, as they say.
Do you think that they were like just watching you, or do you have any idea how that goes, or how do they go about even picking you? Do you know that?
From what I understand, most of the time an existing reviewer will identify somebody that they think is a candidate, and then GC looks them over. I'm not exactly sure what they do. I know it took a couple of months, so I imagine they probably looked at my logs and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So here's my question for you is, have you ever been to the mothership? Have you been to the lily pad?
No, I have not.
I know that's on my list of places to go.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't mind going there. I don't have a cache yet in Washington. There's a big gaping hole on my map along the West Coast there. So.
Now, what does the job of reviewer entail?
Most of it is when people hide caches. Basically, they hide a cache, and you just have to make sure that it meets all of the hiding guidelines, which, surprisingly, most people don't actually read. But I can't blame them. It's a lot of legalese and, you know, that kind of thing. And then just make sure that the cache meets the guidelines, meets the spirit of the sport, and then publish it. And the other half of the job involves dealing with conflicts. Caches get angry, caches need to get archived, things don't get maintained. So really it has the two pieces.
Now, give me a little bit of insight what your day looks like as far as caching, like or reviewing. What does that look like for you when you wake up? Or like, how often do you do the reviewing process? What's that look like?
Officially, we have 72 hours to review a cache after it's been submitted. I try to get in there about once a day, sometimes a couple times a day. Kind of depends on whatever my personal schedule's doing. Sometimes I get like a little break at work and I can hop on and look, or, you know, I get a chance in the evening at home if nothing's going on. They have a review queue. So all of the caches that are like in Michigan and in my zone will come up on my list, and I can see everything that's there. And they have a couple of tools that GC has for us to do, like they call it a litmus test, kind of check some things out against them. There's also a good bunch of email that I get. I have a separate reviewer email account for all of my reviewer questions and things that people send. So typically I'll go through the list of caches to be reviewed, go through the email. I'd say probably about an hour a day.
That's really not too bad. I figured that it'd be quite a lot. I mean, I know I see all the time different times around our area that posts are getting, our caches are getting approved at different times of the day, and so I thought it'd be like a lot more time spent on reviewing.
Yeah, there are times, like some of the holiday weekends and things like that especially, where I may have emptied the queue the day before, and I'll open it up and it'll be like 57 caches awaiting review, and it's like, oh my gosh. It's like, well, then that's about 2 to 3 hours. But yeah, I also try to stagger the times that I kick them out to. We have a lot of FTF hounds in our area, so to kind of keep them running at all times of day.
Well, how about the caches being assigned to the reviewers? How does that work?
What do you mean cache assigned to the reviewer?
When a cache is submitted, how is it routed to the appropriate reviewers?
Oh, typically it's by state. When you hide a cache, you have to pick what state it's in or what country it's in.
Todd has like 5 minutes. He's like, oh yeah, thanks, I will.
And that'll basically send it to the review queue for that state. Different states have a few different ways of doing it. I know like Wisconsin rotates a couple of different people through. Rusty, the other Michigan reviewer, and I kind of split it up that I take the west side of the state, so everything latitude 85 or higher, excuse me, longitude 85 and higher, he takes 85 and lower. So we have a little script that runs on inside our browser, and then it highlights the ones for me that are on my side.
So now if you, I mean, you all could share the reviewing, like say you were out of town and didn't have access to the internet, or you there was lots in your area, could Rusty help you out and approve those caches for you?
Absolutely, and we do that quite frequently. Sometimes being the east side of the state, Detroit gets quite a few from time to time. I've helped out him with a few, and likewise he's helped me out, and then we've gone on vacation and cover for the other one. But also, like some areas of the world don't have a lot of reviewers. Another reviewer might step in for a little while, like if somebody has like a family leave or an emergency or something. So there's no hard and fast set anything in the system, but reviewers in general try to not step on each other's toes.
Now, do you find that it would be easier, like, to approve the caches that are around your area as opposed to Rusty's area because you kind of know the area, or do you find that as long as it passed the litmus test that it's usually easy no matter what?
The litmus test is only kind of a first pass. It checks for some of the obvious errors and obvious problems. It is kind of nice if it's like right in my immediate area because I am familiar with most of the parks and stuff around here now. But I do quite a bit in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which I have not cached in yet. So we rely a lot on like maps and aerial photos and things like that to see if there's guideline violations with things like railroad tracks or schools or airports and things like that.
You gotta love Google Earth.
Oh, Google Earth is fantastic.
Now, what are some of the common mistakes that have caches rejected?
There's two that are really the most common of all. And the proximity one, the 528 feet, is probably the biggest one. I think it's kind of hard for cachers to actually measure the other distances, and especially if there's a multi or a mystery cache nearby, they might not know that the final is there or where the other stages are if they haven't done them. The proximity is probably the first one, and the second one is that now GC is requiring all of the stages and final stages for the mysteries and stuff like that to be actually entered as hidden waypoints, and people forget.
I noticed that. I did notice that because the last cache that I did place was a mystery cache, and I just put it as a note to the reviewer where the final was because I knew I needed to let him know where it was at. But he got back to me and said, no, you need to go through and put it as a separate hidden waypoint. And so I did it right away, and that's the first multi-stage that I had done in a while since that had been implemented into the site. So I didn't know, but now I do.
Yep. There's a few, and it really depends from reviewer to reviewer how they handle it. There's a few quirks or things that specific people really look for. I know there's a reviewer that really likes to look at hints, and I know there's another reviewer that's big on like handicapped if it's a terrain one. Some people are hard and fast on the 528 feet for proximity, and some people are like, well, that's, you know, ballpark.
So when you first became a reviewer, did Rusty or anyone else kind of take you under their wing and show you how you needed to go about it stuff, or does Groundspeak have like a training document or something like that?
Groundspeak does have there's a special reviewer forum that only the reviewers access, and there is a whole section in there on training. There's general guidelines, general rules. There's a whole section on different tools. Some of the other reviewers have actually written applications and scripts and things like this to help. It's tremendously overwhelming at first. There's so much information and all sorts of new computer programs to play with. Rusty has been a tremendous mentor to me. We have each other's phone number, so we frequently will call each other if we have questions. So every now and then I'll get something I haven't seen before, and it's like, what do you think about that one?
Now, one of my other questions was, I've seen a lot of reviewers have their own reviewer account. Some of them don't, but I have noticed, too, that all of them, the reviewer accounts say that they're premium accounts. Now, is that something that is a requirement from Groundspeak, or is it just something that you guys do and pay for because of out of generosity?
Actually, Groundspeak gives the premium account to the reviewers. It's kind of needed as part of the power enabling features of the website. So we don't actually pay for our reviewer accounts in that sense. Mm-hmm. They make them premium just so that when they give the reviewer powers, everything works. So we don't get the pop-ups and the can't run the pocket queries or things like that.
Daryl, do you have any other questions right off the hand?
Sure. Actually, I was talking with another reviewer, and it was about some FTF code of ethics that they adhere to. But what I understand is that that's actually on a per cacher basis, or on a per reviewer basis. What is your policy on FTF since you're publishing them?
I do enjoy a good FTF hunt. I've been on several myself before I became a reviewer. As of the last recollection I recall of the official FTF requirements, we are allowed to go for traditionals. We are not allowed to go for multis or puzzles until they've been out for 7 days. I've actually gone out on a couple of FTFs since becoming a reviewer. There's really no advantage anymore with the direct to your phone stuff, the instant notifications that cachers can sign up for.
Sure.
A good caching friend of mine has that to his phone, and he actually stood here at my house when I punched the publish button, and it wasn't 5 seconds and his phone went off. It was like, okay, well, there goes any advantage we might have had. I've actually gone out on a couple where I would publish, I'd hop in the car, get over there, and I'd be second, or even in one case, third. This particular area in Michigan, there's a lot of FTF hunters. So generally what I try to adhere to. I don't know what the other reviewer said as far as that his code of ethics goes.
Someone in our chat here has asked, will you, Tiki, have someone else publish a cache so that you can go hunt it?
I can do that. If Rusty or even one of the other, I can get an out-of-state reviewer to review a cache for me if I wanted to go do it. I haven't, I guess I haven't felt the need yet. I get an FTF every now and then, and that's good enough for me, so.
Yeah, my fun with FTFs are actually hunting for the cache, or for the groups of people hunting for the cache, not so much the actual find.
Right, the mini events, yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, now Java Freak was wondering what kind of effect being a reviewer has had on your caching. Is it as much fun to go out and hunt ones now that you're a reviewer?
The It hasn't affected the hunt so much, but being that I spend like an hour to 2 hours a day working on caches, if you call it that, it takes a little of the time. So I it's an hour or two I wouldn't have out in the field. The other thing that has been a little bit difficult for me to get used to is there's drama that occurs. Cachers aren't happy. Certain cachers don't like each other. So sometimes people try to hide caches and they just don't take no for an answer. And that kind of wears on me a little bit. I know that shortly after I started reviewing, I wasn't so inclined to go caching anymore. Luckily, my wonderful partner has kicked me out the door a few times.
So, let's see. What else? I'm trying to think of any other questions. Does anyone in our forum or our live chat have any other questions right now for Tiki? If you do, I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody. Go ahead and ask your questions. If you want to ask your questions, if you have any. Actually, it's muting everyone back up again. Let me try that again. Let's see. Another thing. Do you guys have any much contact with like the powers that be up at Groundspeak, or do you guys mostly talk to other reviewers?
Let's see.
We're all going to get our hand released.
Try not to get Groundspeak involved unless it's something of big importance. Most of the time, any immediate questions I can typically ask Rusty, the other Michigan reviewer. In the reviewer forums, they have kind of a what do you think of this cache that we can present a cache and the other reviewers can chime in what they think. And Groundspeak actually participates in those as well. They're very active. And we do have contact with the people at Groundspeak, and they have gotten involved on a few occasions. But I think they kind of leave it up to us for the most part.
Now, if
that's cool.
Now, if a okay, if a cacher,
sorry,
no problem. The joy of open mics and no one can see each other.
Oh yeah.
If a cacher has a question about something that they're not sure is permitted, what's the best way about having that answered?
I would certainly suggest the first thing you do is just send your reviewer an email. If it's something that's definitely off limits or has been, maybe another cacher's asked it before, they might be able to give you a very quick answer. If you don't like their answer, you can appeal it to Groundspeak and say, hey, I think this is special, can you let me do this? And if the reviewer can't answer it, they will most certainly, seek out either other reviewers or Groundspeak itself to assist you.
What's the best way, say there's a new cacher out there, a fairly new cacher, because I wouldn't recommend anyone placing caches unless they've had a few caches under their belt. But a fairly new cacher, what's the best way for them to find out who their reviewer is? Is there any easy way for them to do that, or just look at the logs of caches around them?
I'd say probably the fastest way would probably be just to look at the bottom of any of the caches in the area, because there's typically a published log in there that's first when the reviewer publishes it. You can also ask Groundspeak, and they can put you in contact with it with your reviewer, but that may take a couple of days. One common thing people didn't know, and I didn't actually know this, is there's you can post a reviewer note that actually doesn't get sent to us. It's a little misleading in that sense, but I'd really suggest an email. Bring up the reviewer's account and email their account there would probably be the best way to get in contact with them.
Okay, cool.
One other thing about that, a lot of cachers will bring up a particular cache, and then like write a note off of that cache page or something like that. And being that that comes in the email, reviewers have no idea which cache that's in reference to. So I always ask people to, you know, please include the GC number or the name of the cache when you're asking a question. So.
Yeah, that would be helpful if you know what cache that they're talking about. Now, what I was going to ask before is, what is the craziest cache that you've seen tried to get approved that wasn't allowed to be approved?
Craziest cache? I'm just trying to think. I don't have like a list I keep, so I'm going to run through a few I can remember. I know somebody had tried to get a cache approved that was on a live train trestle. It included a description of, you know, the times the trains come by, and sometimes, you know, don't go out there at these times kind of thing. It was a relatively active line. Like, I think there were like 3 or 4 trains a day.
Oh my.
It was like, sorry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of commercial caches. One of the guidelines is you're not supposed to like solicit for other businesses. There was one that came up. It was like Joe's Grill, and it included like a whole menu list. Like, here's all the items that they have, like a hot dog, hamburger, you know, $1.50. It had their hours of operation, web link to their website, and like, you know, all the names of the employees. It was like, oh, you can't do that.
Now that brings up a question for me though. Like, I've seen, like, say, MIGO or MIGO or however you pronounce them, Michigan Geocachers Association.
Yes.
I've seen different, like, cache pages that have, like, links to that, but then I've also seen where caches get disapproved because they have links to something like another podcast or something like that. Is there any specific reason for those, or is it just kind of however the reviewer feels?
It is kind of up to the reviewer. There's kind of a gray area. Let's see. Yeah, it's interesting. I've actually never thought of that with the MIGO stuff on there.
Well, the reason I ask is because I also listen to Podcacher, and I know that a lot of people have got their caches disapproved either because they mention Podcacher on the page, or because you have to download a file, an audio file, and I understand that, but it's the linking to or mentioning Podcacher that kind of confuses me.
Yeah, I can't give you a real good answer on that.
And that's okay.
If it's not for profit, I know that typically helps, but that's not a yes or no kind of thing. I guess it has something to do too with the amount of stuff on there. Like, if the cache said, like, you know, this is, you know, Joe's Restaurant, here's Joe's menu, here's the link to Joe's website, you know, that's a clear violation. I know a lot of reviewers, like the Walmart caches, you can't actually call it Walmart. For a while, that's kind of gone back and forth in some of the discussions on the reviewer forums. It's like, if you can decommercialize it a bit, then sometimes it'll pass. But again, I'd really have to look at it on a cache by cache basis. You know, I mean,
okay, that's cool.
How much description is on the page? You know, is it more like a famous place that you're using as like a landmark reference, or is it really, you know, promoting that place?
Mm-hmm. Java Freak is asking, do reviewers have a time frame that they sign up for / agree to work for? Like, do you have a time commitment, or is it just until you quit, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's until you quit or they fire you.
is being fired something that happens fairly a lot, or is it mostly that people quit?
I don't know. I know of a few reviewers that have been fired. I know of a few that have quit. I know of a few that have joined. I mean, I think right now we're at about 130 worldwide, so it's not that big of a group.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that one or the other would be more prevalent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's cool. Daryl, do you have any questions?
I don't think I have anything right now.
All right. I'm going to try unmuting everybody again. Last time I tried this, it kicked them back into mute. I don't know why it did that. But if there's anyone out there that has a question, go ahead and it kicked them back into mute again. I don't know. We're having issues, I guess, with TalkShoe again tonight. Every time I try to unmute everybody, it mutes them back up again. If you have a question, go ahead and type it in. But I'm going to also remind you guys right now that this podcast is supported by you guys, the listener. And by that, I mean that the more people you tell about this podcast, the more people that download it, is a good way to get sponsored or sponsors this podcast. Another thing you can do is donate. There's a PayPal link right on our website, geocachingpodcast.info. And there's also, you could donate stuff if you want to, too. Just like if you wanted to donate anything for a giveaway that we would for this podcast. So those are a couple ways that you can support this podcast. Again, our webpage is geocachingpodcast.info. We do this whole thing live every Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And once again, you don't need to have an ID to call in to this show anymore. You can just call 724-444-7444 and just put our TalkCast ID 7525, and that'll get you right into us. So I don't think we have any other questions. It doesn't look like we have any other questions for our reviewer, Tiki. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and close out our show. Anyone who's just listening to this as a recording, one of the bonuses of joining us live is that after I stop recording, usually we stay on the line and talk a little bit about some other stuff or even continue the conversation here that we're doing now. So with that, go out, go get them. Try to stay away from the mosquitoes this week as you go out in your caching. Have a good week, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having me.